Mr. Rose, reel 9.
And when you weren't actually at anchor and the ship was at sea, what were the duties of the motorman there?
Well,
the boatman.
As regards, that's when I come into the dynamos here on repair papers. And I call up the stokehold. If there was nothing to do on the motorboat, we just go up and we could do what there was in a few hours up there, you see. If she didn't want overhauling, valves cleaning or anything like that, plugs you can clean in a few moments. But you'd get appointed to one of the more easier jobs.
And you would be actually responsible for the efficient and thorough maintenance of the...
Well, not so much for the maintenance there, but the ERA was always appointed to this, you see. Anything wrong with it, you see, mechanically, you went to him, you see. You did the valves, him and you, both of you did the valves, agreed ground the valves and things like that. The oil changing in the sump and things like that, and it was all your pigeon, and cleaning the plugs and the points.
And though you were actually on the motorboat, you were seeing all sorts of people. You didn't have that much contact because you were down below.
Yeah, exactly.
You were inside, so you didn't see
it. Had a canopy from the bows, this little boat, tiny little boat, but 16 feet long, I should think she was. And half of it was the canopy. It was the canopy for the Admiral's. And all red cushions and everything in there, and the little well that he stood up or walked round into. But you were shut away underneath this canopy that ran right down to the bows of the boat. And then the coxswain and the deputy coxswain, because you have two, you see, in a boat. One for the, when you go alongside, he throws a rope to the people, or use his boat hook. You've seen them standing up with a boat hook, see. Well, that's how it's done. And they had a platform just behind me, and I'm in really in utter darkness except for what I can see between their legs.
But you had one incident with Admiral
Cowan. Yeah.
Tell me.
That was the one. Well, this time we were at Bjorka, in the Bjorka Sound. Between Finland and right on the end of Finland and Russia. It's not a long way from the Russian border. And we had a little base there, a little place it was, a little tiny Finnish village. And the ships, which was about half a dozen in all, one submarine, I think it was, two destroyers, one light cruiser and a carrier. And this day, it was a beautiful summer's day. Water was just like a mill pond. And after dinner, we were called away. So the coxswain said, we're waiting for don't want to hurry. He said, we've got plenty of time. We've got to pick the Admiral up at the gangway on the quarter deck in about 10 minutes' time. He said, and then we're going over and wait at the entrance of the harbour for this French destroyer that's coming, calling in, just to pay her respects. I don't know what she was calling in for, because they were nothing to do with the trouble that was out there, the French. Pardon. And in about 10 minutes' time, the Admiral came down the gangway, stepped into the boat, sat down, and signalled to the coxswain to get underway, and he told him where he wanted to go towards the mouth of the harbour. So he said, there's plenty of time. He said, she hadn't rounded the point yet, the destroyer. And the little fella, he was a little chap, about 4 foot high. I think he was 5 feet, very short he was. But he stood in the well of the boat, and we were just jogging along, probably about 4 or 6 knots, just wasting time. And we got to about the mouth of the harbour, and he signalled it stop there, just waiting for the boat, and eventually it appeared some 3 or 4 miles out round the point. So I'd still got the engine running. So my lord, the admiral, decided that he looked a bit inconspicuous standing down in the well. You could only see about that much of him. He stood up on the deck alongside the jackstarp, which was flying the wide ensign, and stood there holding on to the jackstarp, and the way he did it, the Lord above knows. And presently I got the signal, and the signals in this boat were always done by the foot, because he's right alongside of me, the coxswain. He's got the wheel there, see, and I'm just in underneath there, see, so all I'd do was watch for his feet. So two, see, was half speed ahead. And I think I must have let the clutch in a bit early. Well, just at that moment, his lordship decided to let go. So he'd just stand there with his hand behind his back like Nelson. How he grabbed the stay, I'll never know. And of course, the boat, as I said, there was a very fast boat. He let the clutch in, she immediately dropped her behind down the water and was away like a shot. And of course, it dropped us behind down, and now Admiral Cowan held on to that check, so I never grabbed it. I never know. Didn't he lead off? I won't say what word he called to the coxswain. He didn't call them to me, but I got them passed on because it was me that did it. Oh, we laughed.
What did he say?
I don't know. I couldn't hear it. See, you got this huge glass. I can see him. You see, I told you he had this glass canopy all the way around, and they'd done a wonderful job. They put this glass, they hadn't broken most of the glass, fortunately enough, and I could see him, what he was doing, you see. And it must look wonderful for the French people, whether they'd ever noticed, I don't know, because he was, as I say, not very tall, and he looked really inconspicuous standing down in the well of the boat. I just imagine the wrench, couldn't see a soul in there. And when he stood up on the deck, he wasn't much higher than the jackstaff itself. And then he let go, which was fatal.
Just a couple of things which we neglected when we were talking about the engine room. First of all, you wore, you said, fear not trousers.
Not in the engine room.
No.
Not in the engine room.
What did you wear in Stockport in the engine room, separate?
In the engine room, you wore usually a pair of old light duck trousers. You wanted something light, but it wasn't dirty, so it was an easy job, see, and a flannel and a jacket, a white jacket. You could buy these at the stores when they issued stores. Or if you'd, pardon me, if you got a friend, a marine, their white jackets, which are used for working in, you could buy one off of him. They were ideal for down in the interim. They were light, you see. Because in Stoke, you had to wear flea and all because of the heat, you see. Not so much when it's all fuel. In the all fuel, you go down in your Sunday clothes and you wouldn't get dirty.
Yeah. And a sweater, not a sweater, but
flannel.
A flannel.
Mm.
A sweatshirt, a vest?
No vest. Just a flannel. Yeah, vests weren't invented in those days.
And you wore wooden clogs?
Not in all fuel.
No,
just ordinary shoes.
Yeah. And oil fuel, though, you wore the big clogs with...
In coal, you had to protect your feet. That was mainly the idea.
And during, when you were on watch in these big ships, coal-fired ships, you used to get refreshment of water only, nothing
at
else.
All,
just
at all.
Cocoa at night.
Sometimes, if you were lucky, sometimes at night... A kindly chief cook would make a pot of cocoa, and they melt down the blocks of cocoa, you know. And you take so much, a scoop of this, like a bit of custard, I mean cocoa colour, and then you add the water to it. And sugar you get out of your own mess. If someone isn't watching, you pinch it from someone else's tin in the middle of the night. Maybe you're not. Someone's been caught pinching the sugar. But that was nothing beside the point, there was.
And what about washing facilities and bathrooms for...
Yes, most ships, except destroyers in the old days, the destroyer didn't have a bathroom. You washed on the upper deck. One's the funny in the winter time, coming out of Stoke, and wash on the upper deck. Especially the seas were breaking over. We because most of those old boats didn't trouble to ride over the waves, they went straight through them. But the other ships have got bathrooms. Well, what do you mean by bathrooms? It's just a plain tarred floor, one or two wash basins, and a tin bath. And that was the name.
Yeah. And when you say on deck, you mean up in the lee of the forecastle head or somewhere, I think?
Yes, well, you know our destroyer, deck of a forecastle destroyer came along like that, and then it went down like that. And here, this break here, here was a bridge, see? And then two little doors led into the mess rooms. That was the, and you stood there, you couldn't wash in the decks. On the mess decks, so you washed on the upper deck under the break of the forecastle.
And you got water from the mess deck, from inside or from the deck?
From the ballroom.
You took it up with you?
Yeah, you used to have a lump of rope and pull it up. You worked with two of you down, you see. I'm talking of these boilers, destroyers, where you worked in pairs. And one filled the, when I'm out of the gauge, water gauge, you open the cock, test cock there, and filled your bucket up with boiling hot water. By the time you got it up on deck, and yeah, of course we got it. But that was the trouble when it was rough seas. You just had a lovely bath, you know, nice hot bath, and overcome a sea with a bit freezing temperature.
But generally speaking, big ships were better for
washing. Oh, they were in every facility.
And for living, generally.
Yeah, well, you've got extra money in destroyers, what they call hard layers, 6 months a day for hard layers.
And you never found, I think you said, you never found the close quarter living of the mess deck a problem, really. You found that you got used to it.
Well, yes, you soon got adapted to it. You either died of starvation if you didn't. That's where you live and eat and sweat. But
were there any problems you found at all? Anything that you didn't like about it?
No.
To get used to?
The food, some of the food in the destroyers, I told you what we bought.
Yeah, tell me about the messing.
The messing in destroyers in the bad old days, as I like to call them, you were issued, a destroyer could only take one day's bread to sea and one day's meat, potatoes and anything like that was a little bit different. So considering the first day at sea you got meat and potatoes and bread, even after that you weren't on your own, but they supplied biscuits, ship's biscuits, and ship's biscuits are not all that palatable at any time, and bully beef. Well, when they run a bit short of bully beef, you're at sea a few times, they open what they call salt pork. And there's nothing more hideous on earth than a piece of salt pork in your mouth. I personally, I always threw it straight over the side. I think like other people did. Some of it was barreled as far back as Nelson's days. Issued by the Victualling Yard, Portsmouth. And it tasted vile. It was green, on us with them. What you're supposed to do is soak it for about 24 hours and then put it up the galley and hope for the best. You used to sometimes get split peas from the store, from the paymaster store, from the coxswain store, and there were split peas with it. But it was about the only palatable part of it. A meal was a split peas. But invariably the salt pork was humped straight over the side.
And as far as you can sort of remember, living was generally better, and food too, in the bigger ships than in the smaller ships.
Yeah, well, of course, the bigger ships you supply, they got the same thing. Meat or bread is baked every day, so you've got no problems there. Meat, they invariably take a week or more supplies. They got what they call a B screen, which you can't have on the destroyers, the old destroyers. So that's why they could only take one day's meat. But in a big ship, you can have a size of beef hanging up there and it'll last probably 5 or 6 days before you go on to bully beef. Yeah. And then from bully beef, when they run a bit low, you start off on the salt pork. And you wonder, when you go to a port,